Hi, I'm Talissa.
And I'm Rachel, and this is Transatlantic Crime, a true crime podcast that covers stories from each side of the pond. Every week, we will both cover a separate story with a running theme.
Disclaimer, this podcast will contain swearing and details that some people may find offensive. If you are of a sensitive disposition, listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Transatlantic Crime.
Same place. Well, hi there, Reach. I have not seen you for at least 2 minutes.
It's been ages. It's been a full week.
Yeah, so, okay, I'm going to stop yanking your chain. Basically, we had to do two stories in 1 week because I'm going away to France. And even though I could record in France, I need all my brain power for eating cheese and
speaking French.
And for making Vince's relatives hate me. Yeah, I mean, answer me this. Do you think it's impolite to ask 80-year-olds what it was like in Nazi-occupied Germany?
No.
When you first met them?
I would maybe give it 10 minutes, but...
So?
Talissa, so how was it when you were 20 and being taken over by Nazis?
What were the Russians really like? It's just, I can't help it. Like, I've got quite a penchant for all things... war and Nazi fighting, like, it just seems really glamorous. I think I've watched Inglourious Basterds too many times. Yeah, it just seems like they had stockings and
just everything, the fashion,
the espionage.
Yeah, who did you trust? What was normal? What was...
would you have hidden Jews in your house? I want to know that. And everyone obviously goes, well, yeah, I would, even though they wouldn't, because you don't want to seem like a dick. Oh god, I'm so interested. I can't wait. I don't know. I'm just gonna have a few drinks, pretend I can speak French, and just get right in there.
Yeah. What if they are like really into it and they really want to tell you, but will you be able to understand them?
Well, I can understand a lot more French than I can speak.
Okay, that's good.
I can nearly understand everything that someone is saying, but that is because when you're listening to a foreign language, like, even if you have zero idea what they're saying, if you can see what their face is like and their movements, sure, and what they're pointing towards and even the gestures that they're making and stuff, you can get the tone and the situation. So that helps a lot. And then understanding like 50% of the words that they're saying also helps. And humans are like really shit at not being able to point at you when they're talking to you, or point at something when they're talking about it. So
yeah,
I can understand loads more than I can speak. So, but Vince will just translate the whole time.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
You'll have to report back.
Yes, and I definitely will, 100%, because I like talking to you about my problems and you have no choice but to hear them, because we're on the podcast. What are you going to do about it? So this week... is, talking of things that people can't understand, cryptic killers.
Good segue.
I know, right? So I was going to do Jack the Ripper because he wrote cryptic letters, blah, blah, blah. And then I thought, do you know what, Talissa? Don't do this to yourself. Like, you don't want to do it. Everyone's heard of it. Like, that was me giving up out of desperation. Uh-huh. And yeah. I was like, no, I will not do this. So I thought a bit harder. And I've come up with this absolute piece of shit called Ben Fields.
Ooh.
So, this happened really recently. And he is one of the creepiest people you've ever come across. So,
okay.
I'll get straight in there.
Do it.
And the person I'm starting off the story with is somebody that was involved with him. Okay?
Okay.
The guy that was involved with him was called... Peter Farquhar. So he was born in Edinburgh on the 3rd of January 1946. And in 2007, after 34 years as an English teacher, he occasionally lectured at Buckingham University. So he was an evangelical Christian who once considered becoming a minister, but he found it really hard to reconcile the fact that he was gay and the fact that he was a Christian.
Okay.
So in his spare time, he wrote. And his first novel, which was called A Wide, Wide Sea, was written in 1997. But but it wasn't published until 2015. And the only reason it was published was that two of his former Buckingham University students, Ben Field and Martin Smith, discovered the manuscript and persuaded him to publish it. He is a really good writer. So over the course of several months, Ben Field worked to get close to Peter, so much so that he was written into his will, which is ding, 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 red flag.
Yeah.
Nobody be changing their wills. Peter believed the couple were in love. They even had a betrothing ceremony. This is weird. Where they each gave each other pen knives. And the pen knives were blessed by a vicar.
You know what I'm picturing right now?
What?
In Tiger King, where the three guys get married to each other.
It is such a similar setup to that. It's just like they've taken the idea of a traditional marriage and they've just run with it.
Yeah.
We're doing this how we want to do it. And the vicar who's in the documentary was like, I thought it was a bit weird.
I went along with it.
He's like, love is love. So yeah. The ceremony was Ben's idea. And because he struggled with his sexuality, Peter had taken a vow of celibacy. And Ben was the first relationship he had ever really had with a man. He was completely and utterly in love.
Aww.
He wrote this in his diary. Ben can love me. A miracle if there was one. I can't believe this has happened. And this is after the church ceremony. One of the happiest moments of my life, gone are the fears of dying alone.
Aww.
So he's just completely head over heels in love.
I can already tell this is going to be tragic.
Oh, it's horrible. So I don't know his exact age, but I think he's in his late 60s at the time.
Aww.
And Ben Fields is in his mid-20s.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't mention that bit. So yeah, Peter Farquhar was born in 1946. And just to put it into context, my mum was born in 1959 and she's now 61 or 60. My mum's like 61, 62. He would have been in his 80s now, Peter Farquhar.
Yeah.
And Ben Fields right now is in his 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So big, big age gap.
Still Tiger King vibes. Except it's reversed.
Yeah. One of the happiest moments of his life, gone are the fears of dying alone. Here's what he doesn't know. At the time, Ben had a girlfriend who he had been dating on and off for 5 years. He also had various female lovers and would go away for weekend trips with them, claiming to Peter that he was at a weekend course. When they underwent the betrothal ceremony, Ben had a string of girlfriends and was in a sexual relationship with Anne Moore Martin.
Okay.
Okay, so strap yourself in for this one.
All right.
Anne Moore Martin was 57 years his senior and deeply religious.
Oh my gosh.
She lived three doors down from Peter.
What?
Yep. She's... Sorry, I'm just laughing at your reaction. So neighbour Anne was 83. She was also an elderly churchgoer and a retired head teacher. When Anne first met Ben in November 2014, she was completely unaware of how involved he had been with Peter and with her partners. So both of these people think that they're in a completely monogamous relationship. Yes. With Ben.
Okay.
This is how Ben wooed Anne. So he used poems and love letters to seduce her. In a love letter, Ben wrote to Anne saying, I love you. I long to make a life with you. A life of sharing and mutual nourishment in love and grace.
What a bunch of shit.
That is so, so going in the clips. Also, it's like, I long to make a life with you. Of what, 7 years at the most?
Yeah.
She's 83. She's had her life.
If I were in my 80s, I can understand if she's feeling lonely or whatever. But I would not believe any man in their 20s writing me love letters. I wouldn't believe it. I'd be like, yeah, okay, this is cool for a while. I like it. But I would not believe any of it.
Like, let's not beat around my very old bush. You don't want to be with me. So Anne had been talking about moving to live with her family, who lived elsewhere in the country. So, like, this is how much she's getting on. She's... can't really be in her own house at the moment.
Oh.
But due to Ben's manipulation and her feelings for him, she began to withdraw contact from her family.
No.
So she just started ignoring them. On the 26th of October 2015, Farquhar, as in Peter Farquhar, was pronounced dead. 69, Peter, a man who had been in good health, died after a long period of confusion and illness. He'd been hospitalised several times after falls, bouts of confusion and memory loss. Ben had been the one to call the paramedic, and eventually his cleaner found him dead on the sofa. The night before he was found dead, Ben and Martin had been at Peter's house feeding him whiskey. His death was recorded as accidental as the result of acute alcohol intoxication. Peter had dedicated his third novel to Ben, and Ben delivered the eulogy at his funeral. He then received his share of the will, which was half of his house and £15,000. He bought himself a new flat for cash.
Wow.
By November 2016, after Peter's death, Ben started putting pressure on Anne to change her will to benefit him and used extreme manipulation tactics to do so. Anne Moore Martin was described as a love-struck teenager by her sister-in-law. She said she loved him. She said they would sit together on the sofa and he would put his arm around her and fluff his eyelashes down her cheek. Gross.
Yeah.
It was as if she was hypnotized by him. All right, okay. Now, this is pretty graphic. He bought her a hand counter to click every time she thought of him, and he populated her house with hand-drawn flowers and photos of himself, one emblazoned with, "I am always with you," underneath. He also bought her a Sibian sex toy and photographed her performing a sex act on him without her knowledge.
This guy's disgusting.
He's so grim. And also, he would fuck a he-monkey if he thought it would give him a tenner. It doesn't matter who it is, he will fuck them. So I was reading this last night and I was like, I read that out to Carly because I was like, oh my God, listen to this. And I said, he also bought her a Sibian sex toy and photographed her performing a sex act on him without her knowledge. And I was like, do you know what a Sibian sex toy is? She was like, yeah. I was like, do you? Yeah, I was like, what is it? Like, okay, what do you think a Sibian sex toy is?
I know what it is.
Do you? Why does everyone know?
Yes.
Well, how do you know? I was wondering. I was waiting for you to ask me what it was.
So, I was actually talking about this the other day.
What do you get up to there in LA?
No, there's a... Do you know who Howard Stern is?
Yeah.
So, he's like this radio guy, and he would have like late night radio show. And sometimes he would have women, usually they were like porn stars or whoever, they would come on and sit on the Sibian during the radio show, and he would just like talk to them.
What is this filth?
I know. Because I was asking Will about it, because I didn't really know. Like, I never really listened to the Howard Stern show. It was kind of when we were kids.
Oh, so it was like the naughty thing to listen to.
I think so, yeah. But I was like, what time of day was this on? And like, yeah. Who is listening to it? It was like a national radio show, so...
It's so rude.
That's so British. This is so rude.
How rude.
Howard Stern would, that's the kind of things he would do on a show where he would just like talk about taboo type things. So that was on brand for him.
I don't approve of him peddling this smut. So anyway, for people that don't know, like I didn't know, apparently everyone else in the world does, and I'm just a massive prude. So tell me if I'm wrong, Rachel, but from what I've gathered, a Sibian sex toy is basically just like a saddle with a cock on it, and you just sit on that and it vibrates, and it's basically just like riding someone.
Yeah, you just sit on it and
it's all plastic.
You can like control the speed and
grind it, basically.
Yeah,
I mean, it sounds great, but I was today years old when I realized they existed. Yeah, he bought an 83-year-old woman one of those. I wonder if she signed him over.
They're really expensive, too. I think they're like $2,000.
Just get a man. That's cheaper and it's the same difference.
Yeah, just do a makeshift one.
Yeah, just be like, don't talk, don't look at me, lay there. Right. I'll tell you when I'm done. Anyway, this turning is a bloody Howard Stern show. Vile.
Get back to murder.
Yeah, get back to murder. I've had enough of this filth.
So rude.
That's so rude. He started writing messages from God on her mirrors, which eventually led to a note saying she should leave her house in her will to Ben and not her niece. So, and the messages are fucking awful. It's like teenage poetry. Like, it's just the saddest thing.
Barf.
Listen to this. The message on one of the mirrors read, "Your intentions are holy. Your work is not yet done. Take care and complete the task given to you by the Lord." So that's one of them, which is a little bit cryptic. And then another one just says, "Don't leave your house to your niece, leave it to Ben." Like, literally almost word for word.
Oh my God.
I was like, Ben, you've just given up.
Yeah.
You were trying. With the dick saddle and the proper mirror messages, you were trying. And then he just went, fuck it, I can't wait any longer. Give me the money.
Just exasperated, like, yeah, scrawling it on the wall.
Give me money now.
Yeah.
Me sick. In Anne's defense, he was drugging her as well, so this one seems so mental. Anne believed those messages were from God, and so eventually she changed her will to include Ben. After giving Ben £4,400 for a car that he needed, well, needed in air quotes, Anne cashed in some bonds she had to the value of 27 grand and gave them to Ben for his brother's dialysis machine.
Sure.
A kidney cleansing medical contraption. Ben had convinced her his brother was seriously ill and she was the only one who could help.
Did he even have a brother?
Yeah, he's got a brother called Tom. He was absolutely fine. Anne started to fall ill in the end of 2016 and her health continued to deteriorate into the new year. On February the 4th, 2017, she was admitted into hospital after suffering a seizure, which she'd never had before. So Anne's niece contacted Thames Valley Police and alleged her aunt was being manipulated by Ben into changing her will. Field was immediately barred from seeing Anne, and in April 2017, realizing that she'd been duped, she cut him out of her will. So that's the good news.
Yes.
But then Anne Moore Martin died humiliated and heartbroken 2 weeks later on the 11th of May.
Oh.
So sad.
That's so sad.
You know. But like, I know you think like you wouldn't believe it, but he is so charming. Even in the, when the police arrest him and stuff, he's just unbelievably polite.
Was he good looking?
You wouldn't look at him and say four, but if you were like 60 to 80, he's a good looking young chap, very much so. He would have no trouble getting a girlfriend his own age.
Okay.
He's got like quite a nice beard, quite good hair, glasses, just
yeah,
tall, like just normal guy. So after Anne's death and just 18 months after Peter's death, when they were both in good health before meeting Ben, the police felt compelled to re-examine the original case. One of the first steps they took to re-examine how Peter died was to dig up his body, put to rest more than a year previously, and bring it into the mortuary for testing. And in the program I watched, you can see the exhumation and you see his, like, obviously you don't see it in full, but you see his corpse. Like, you see them cutting bits of hair off of his head.
Wow.
He's really well preserved, even though he's been buried for 18 months.
Yeah.
Which is good, because it meant that they could do toxicology reports on his hair, which would show that if he'd had drugs in his system, obviously it resides in your hair. They soon identified that Peter was slowly poisoned over time. His brother, Ian, had previously questioned the cause of death, knowing that his brother had never had a problem with drinking. He reportedly had bottles of vintage wine in his garage that had been there for years. So that's not really the MO of an alcoholic, is it? Like,
right,
you drink everything you have. It was later ascertained that his drinks had been spiked with thiophenol and potine, a high-strength Irish alcohol, and his food had been laced with drugs. Detectives then discovered Peter's diaries, in which he detailed his daily thoughts and events. In it, he said he had met the love of his life. He describes in his journal his experiencing of hallucinations, unaware that his lover was drugging him with a hallucinogenic. The diary read, "I wanted to die. I saw awful packs of hideous black insects." Field attempted to convince Farquhar he was going insane by moving or breaking objects around the home, deleting random phone contacts and writing cryptic messages on the mirrors, just as he had with Anne. On another occasion, he was fed the psychedelic drug 2CB before going for a drive and said he feared he was being attacked by bars of light.
What?
Yeah. In January 2018, Ben, and I just included this because it's hilarious, Ben and his magician friend Martin Smith. What a loser.
His only friend. That's his only friend.
And he was a magician, don't forget that.
Exactly. They were made for each other.
They were made for each other. They were arrested by police on suspicion of murdering Peter and attempting to murder his neighbour, Anne. During his trial, Field admitted to drugging Peter with benzodiazepines, which I enjoy myself, and hallucinogens. Obviously, too many of them are not good. To torment him, telling the jury that he did it for no other reason other than it was cruel, to upset and torment Peter purely out of meanness.
Why did he tell them that? Isn't that something you keep to yourself? He's a psychopath for sure.
Yeah, he's a psychopath. He knew he couldn't get out of it, and he was just enjoying his day in court, I think. He also spiked his drink with biothanol and poitin in order to make him question his sanity. Prosecutors came to the conclusion, as there were no marks on Peter's body, Field had likely suffocated him when he was too weak to resist. On the 9th of August 2019, Ben was convicted of his murder, and on the 18th of October sentenced to 36 years to life imprisonment. Field was acquitted of the attempted murder of Anne Moore Martin.
Why?
Because he got found out and then he wasn't allowed to see her. So in the preceding 2 weeks, she died. But that could have been of a broken heart. She was going to die anyway. She was 83. Yeah. To be honest, though, his drugging her probably fast-forwarded her route to death like quite a lot, I'm assuming.
She might have gone through a withdrawal.
Yeah, maybe her liver gave out.
Right, yeah. Like she did all these drugs unknowingly and then all of a sudden they were cut from her system and then she couldn't handle it anymore. Oh my gosh.
It happens all the time. Evil piece of shit. And there's a really good documentary called Catching a Killer, and it's like Diary from Beyond the Grave, and that's again on Channel 4. And in that, oh my good God, the stuff you see. He would film stuff on his phone, like he filmed Peter in bed, and the way he talks to him is so creepy. He's like, "You're confused again, aren't you? You're a bit confused again. Why are you confused?" He's just really like dead voiced asking him what's wrong when the problem is clearly one that he's created.
You know exactly what the problem is.
Oh, it's awful. And like, why would you film him either? You should be helping him.
Yeah.
It is hideous.
Just a disgusting human being.
He is evil. And his girlfriend had no idea. The girlfriend of 5 years.
Mm.
She had zero idea of any of this. And apparently when he got arrested, she was like, "What's happened?" He was like, "Oh, they think I've like basically tricked Anne into putting her into my will, but I haven't." He was trying to become a minister as well, Benjamin Field, which is like the perfect cover.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm a nice guy.
Yeah.
It just let him get close to old churchgoers that he could drug, fuck, and rob. Also, no need to fuck them.
No. No need to do any of this.
That's my concern, is the fucking. Oh, anyway.
That was a good story. Disgusting person. I've never heard of him, so.
It's really new. It didn't happen long ago at all.
Yeah, this happened like a year ago, him being convicted, almost.
He's probably still appealing and stuff, to be fair.
Yeah, good job.
36 to life is a long time. Thanks, Rach. Okay.
So, cryptid killers.
You got loads. America has loads.
I tried.
Really?
I kind of went through the same thing as you did.
Zodiac?
Zodiac. He's, if it's a male, it probably is.
Yeah.
He's the top one, and there aren't that many other ones. Like, some killers left notes behind or whatever, but nothing to the extent of the Zodiac killer.
No.
But we've heard all those stories.
And we want something new.
Right.
Give the people what they want.
So this is the story of Ricky McCormack. Have you heard of him?
No.
Okay. Well, he's already dead in this story.
Good.
41-year-old Ricky McCormack's body was found on June 30th, 1999 in St. Charles County, Missouri.
Wait, is Ricky the bad guy or the good guy?
Well, we don't know.
Because I just said good, but he might be nice. So if he's nice, I'm sorry. And if he's bad, I'm not.
We can cut that out if you want.
Nah, keep it in. I don't care. I am who I am.
So discovered between a cornfield and a road, police knew this spot well. It was an area where bodies had been dumped before. How his corpse ended up face down in this cornfield in rural St. Charles County was anyone's guess. At the time, no one had reported Ricky missing. He was last seen at an Amoco gas station that he worked at part-time 3 days before his remains were found. He was found in dirty blue jeans and a stained white t-shirt. Although it had just been 3 days since he disappeared, The flesh on his outstretched hands were already rotted on the point of his fingertips, just below the knuckles, and they had fallen off. So he was pretty badly decomposed.
People just go, the body's decomposed. You're like, I'm going to break it down for you. The fingers were all rotted off. Thanks, Rich.
A lot of the articles that I read, they made a point to say that.
No fingerprints? They dipped his fingers in acid?
Just the fact that it had only been 3 days since he was last seen alive, and he was already this badly decomposed.
Where is this again? Is it Hawk County or...
Missouri, in a cornfield. It was June, so yeah, I would guess it would be kind of clammy. Humid and, yeah, clammy. He was found in a field 20 miles from his home and work. He couldn't drive, and buses didn't run out to empty cornfields. So they had no idea how he got there, why he was in that part of Missouri, when it had nothing to do with him.
Well, I'm not a police officer, but I'm assuming killed and dumped. Come on.
Yeah.
Not Missouri.
So police immediately suspected foul play.
Yeah.
Advanced decomposition. Duh. You're like, duh.
I'm like, yeah. Right, look, can we just get that out the way? This wasn't an accident. All right, yeah. Now let's get on with the proper police work.
Advanced decomposition made an autopsy of McCormack difficult. Following a thorough examination, pathologists with the St. Charles County Medical Examiner's Office ultimately ruled McCormack's cause of death as undetermined. The medical examiner couldn't find any stab or gunshot wounds. There could have been a head wound, but the body was too decomposed for anyone to be sure. So they basically couldn't find how he died.
That's a bit of a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. The sheriff classified McCormack's death as suspicious. Detective searched the
This is annoying me.
You're just standing in the background as they're doing their job. Like, yes.
Like his hand is just like hovering over the box going, accident? Or and I'm like, that. Just put it in the right box.
Yeah. Ricky was a black gentleman. So I don't know if that may have affected how seriously they took the case at the time.
Yeah, the fucks they gave probably went seriously down.
Yeah. Detectives searched the 41-year-old victim's pockets for clues and interviewed his relatives, girlfriend, and others who knew him. The only thing that he may have had a connection to was the fact that in 1993, he served 11 months in prison for a felony conviction of first-degree sexual abuse. More recently, he had supposedly had ties to a local drug ring. His girlfriend told the police that he was carrying drugs to Orlando, Florida. McCormack had made his most recent trip just 2 weeks before his death. So this is all supposedly.
So they think it's like a drug running thing gone wrong, maybe.
Yes, or the fact that he went to prison in 1993, he had had a relationship with an underage girl.
Right.
And that girl had two children. So he was the father of two children with her.
Okay.
And I think he also had two other kids.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't... What year is this?
It was the 90s. So he was found in 1999. He went to prison in 1993.
It's not like it was the 30s where like 15-year-olds got married willy-nilly.
Right.
That's a bit late for me. My Lycometer on him is going down slightly.
You'll find out too, he wasn't a very smart guy. He might have been a little bit...
on the low IQ, yeah.
Yes. Police searched for a reason why somebody must have wanted to kill him. But with no leads and with no clear evidence of a crime, there wasn't much for investigators to do. They said, we've worked every lead, and not only can we not prove it was a homicide, we can't even come up with a motive for this guy to be dead. So, over the next 12 years, the case remained cold. Also, side note, so in 1995, 4 years before Ricky died, authorities discovered the body of an alleged sex worker in an abandoned house along the same stretch of road as the cornfield that Ricky was found in. 2 years after Ricky's death, state road crews mowing grass about 300 yards away from where they found Ricky's body, they found nude bodies of two more women.
Jeez, this is just where you're gonna dump corpses.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And who knows if it's connected, but I kept that in there because who knows?
Kind of reminds me of, you know, Lisk, the Long Island serial killer.
Yes.
There's a bit of scrubby marshland in Long Island, and they keep finding bodies there, and they're like, is this the same person, or is this just an unbelievably convenient place to dump a body?
Right, yeah.
It's such thick marshland that you can't get through it. If you make the effort to dump a body there, like, no one just goes, like, traipsing through there for no reason.
Yeah, no one's hiking around there.
No, it's basically just, like, uninhabitable marsh. No one's going to discover it if you put it in far enough.
Right.
So it's a difficult one, isn't it? In the old body dumping hotspot, it's like, is this just a place people know about?
Or like, is it connected?
Yeah. You said about an abandoned house. Yeah. In England, we don't really have those. You have an abandoned house on a council estate, maybe, that's between two other houses, and it's like derelict and you'll die if you go in from a beam falling on you. Mm-hmm. Or there's a big old empty factory, but there's... In America, I feel like there's so many fucking empty houses for bad shit to happen in.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You guys are spoilt with land. We don't have the land.
So much land, so much space.
You're like, bored of this house, see you later. I'm just gonna go build another one. No!
When we were driving back to Minnesota a couple of weeks ago, there were just broken down farmhouses. Like, you could tell no one lived in them. Or people
creepy.
Did live in them, but they're just a dime a dozen in the middle of America.
Murder
you know,
house.
Even in LA, there's houses around that people can't afford to live in anymore, or they get old and they go live in a home and their house is just...
Are you never willing with Will to just buy like an old abandoned house and do it up?
Oh yeah, we would love to. There's like a house right around the corner and we walk past it all the time. It's such a like... cool 70s design.
Oh, do it.
We so want to. It would be so cool, but it's completely broken down as well. So we would take double the amount of however much you buy for it to fix it up. And
but also it's like, I like it because A, you get to do it how you want, and yeah. B, like, it's using up stuff that's already there and not wasting money, because building a house isn't wasting money because someone's obviously going to live in it. But I don't know, I just like the romantic idea of getting a plot of land and getting me a wife and a few kids and a dog. You know,
the wife, the kids, the whole shebang.
Yeah, I just think that's really cool. But anyway, yeah, we don't really have abandoned houses in England, and I mean, we do, but just nowhere near the amount that you have, which I think is what breeds the sinister serial killer fun fair that is old houses.
Anyways, back to the story.
Yeah.
So over the next 12 years, the case remains cold. In March of 2011, the FBI's Crypt Analysis and Racketeering Records Unit, or the CRUU, shared two notes that had been found in the pocket of McCormick's jeans.
Okay.
The police found the notes on McCormick's body and, unsure of what to make of them, turned to the FBI for help. For more than a decade, the FBI couldn't crack McCormick's code, which is why they released them to the public in 2011.
Oh, they should have been doing that so long ago. The public love cracking a code.
Yep.
The public cracked the Zodiac code.
I know.
Come on.
Well, let's talk about the code a little bit.
All right.
Investigators believe the notes in McCormick's pockets were written up to 3 days before his death. The note contains over 30 lines of coded text, including numbers, letters, and parentheses. It's just like a line of letters.
I'm so shit at codes, I get really irritated. Like, people go, oh, I love a puzzle. No, I feel like punching the piece of paper and then and then myself in the face. It makes me feel stupid.
I know, I'm the same. And
I've got no patience.
My dream last night, because I was researching, I was finishing up this story last night before I went to sleep. My dream was that I was in this group of people looking at this piece of paper with the code on it. And then all of a sudden, some person was like, oh, yeah, this is what it says. It's so easy. And making everyone else feel stupid that they didn't know.
Was that a dream or was that last week at the cafe? So Carly loves stuff like that. And her friend sent her at the start of lockdown, when everyone couldn't leave the house and was they bought like puzzles and stuff. Carly's friend Emily, who really likes, have you ever been to like a locked room puzzle or ever?
I am so not entertained by that.
Oh, me neither. We had to do it for a work thing. It was mayhem. Just people screaming out answers, like they think it might be.
Someone's always really competitive too.
I can't stand competitiveness. Like,
no.
I either know I'm good at something, I'm quietly confident, or I don't care.
Right. Same.
I know I'm great. Doesn't matter. Or I'm like, look, I'm shit. This is going to be no fun for me. No, thank you.
Don't yell at me.
Don't shout the answers. I don't care. Yeah. So basically, Emily sent her a package and it was like, you had to sort out 10 clues. And then at the end of that, you got a code that you put into a website and it gave you a message. And Carly was sat there doing it for like an hour. And I looked at one thing and was like, don't know what it is. This is stupid.
I'm out.
I was like, my idea of fun isn't feeling stupid. Just like on roller coaster rides. Like, my idea of fun isn't that feeling where you're going to die. Frustration, not my idea of fun.
I don't want to bend my brain or feel like I'm going to die as a form of entertainment.
Absolutely not. For it to be fun for me, I need it to be achievable.
Yeah. Let's go bowling. The end.
I'll do mini golf if the course isn't that hard. What were we even talking about? The code.
Talking about the code.
The code.
And my dream.
Your dream, right?
Stupid. Being made to feel stupid in my own dream.
Yeah, not my idea of fun. Or yours.
No. Despite extensive work by the CRUU, as well as help from the American Cryptogram Association, the meanings of these two coded notes have not been cracked.
What?
So obviously, they passed it out to the internet, took a hold of it in 2011.
Yeah.
It's been passed on Reddit a bunch of times.
Still nothing?
Still nothing. So, some web sleuths see the evidence of bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or even brain damage. Some think that they are nothing more than a handwritten schedule for his medication. So they think that possibly he wrote it.
Okay.
Others ask whether a high school dropout who could barely write his own name could produce something that the FBI and people around the world haven't been able to crack.
There is the chance it is just nonsense.
Some think that his murderer may have planted the notes as a red herring to the police. According to members of McCormick's family, he had also used encrypted notes like this when he was a child, but apparently no one in his family knows how to decipher the codes. His mom said, "They told us the only thing in his pockets were the emergency room tickets,"
okay.
His mother told the press. Now, 12 years later, they come back with this chicken scratch shit. So that's what his mom said.
I am so into his mom. And that is exactly what I would say. Come back to me 12 years later with this chicken scratch shit. Like,
expecting me to know.
You can't even decipher it yourself. Like, stop jamming up my phone line calling me. You time wasters.
Yeah.
So good.
Dan Olson, chief of the FBI's CRRU, explained the significance of the cipher found on Ricky. "It doesn't happen often that we have an unsolved cipher of this length and significance. The characters are not random. There are many E's, for example, that could be used as a spacer. There are many characteristics that suggest it could be solved, many patterns. The problem is, we don't know why it's not solvable."
Well, the Enigma machine, like, you know, the guy who I said to Vince, isn't that the guy that they chemically castrated and then he killed himself?
Yeah.
That guy, he was working on an Enigma that everyone was like, haven't got a fucking clue what it means. It took them years and a special state-of-the-art computer that filled up a room to be able to decipher that. And it wasn't even that hard. Okay, the randomness of it was difficult, but the method wasn't difficult. So basically what they said was, they would have A, B, C, D, E, F, G, da, 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 on a wheel. Then they would spin the wheel, and then they would know the coordinates of that, and then they would share that with the other person. But unless you knew that, you couldn't decipher it yourself.
Right.
maybe he had a system, but it would take, you know, because of the randomness of it all. Like, another really good example is, you know, I can't remember what he was called. He was called Josh something. And he killed his wife, and he said that he went on a camping trip and she never came back. And he had two kids. And his dad was, like, also obsessed with the wife. Do you remember this? Any of this?
No, I don't.
Well, basically, anyway, to cut a long story short, if you know what I'm talking about, that's fine. If you don't, it's not relevant to the story. But he, but he had hard drives. And he'd encrypted them so well with a password that the FBI couldn't get into them.
Yes.
Yeah. And basically, they had to, like, you can run, like, a code cracker on a password for a hard drive. And they said we had, like, 10, these amateurs had, like, 10 computers running 24 hours a day for 3 months. And they hadn't even cracked, like, one number.
And he's the guy that made a lot of videos.
Yeah.
Just talking about himself and... Yes, I totally, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember his second name. But that's just one example of how if someone doesn't want you to figure out what they've written down or what they've made, there is a very easy way to do that.
Right.
Unless you know the key, you can't.
Yeah, and it's only in your head.
And if he's been doing that since he's a kid, you said he that it used to do it when he was a kid.
Possibly, but why would he... It's very sketchy because it's like, why were those in his pocket?
Maybe just notes for himself that he didn't want anyone else to know about, like secret thoughts, like a journal or...
Yeah, but just the fact that he wasn't that smart of a person and he was able to make a code up that nobody's been able to crack. So the notes have stumped the world's foremost code breakers. McCormick's notes now rank third on the CRRU's list of top unsolved cases, behind only an unbroken cipher authored by the self-proclaimed Zodiac Killer in 1969.
Shit.
And a secret threat letter written to an undisclosed public agency about 25 years ago.
Fuck.
To this day... The case remains open.
Oh my god, let's get a picture of the thing and put it on the Instagram and someone can solve it.
Yeah, that would be really good press, really good marketing for our podcast.
I believe in you, Froggy McFuck 420 or whoever whoever put that comment about the lizard people on our Instagram.
And Ted Kennedy's number one fan. You guys can do it.
Ted Kennedy, people that hate us. Come on. Now's your chance to make us look like fools.
Put your heads together. Make us look like fools. So that's the story of Ricky McCormick and the mysterious notes found in his pocket.
Right. That's so interesting. Are they online, the notes, do you know? They must be. They simply must be.
Yeah, they are.
Will you send them over to me? Because I'm going to give them to my dad. He's immense, don't you know? He's got an IQ of 158.
Wow.
Which is loads.
I did not know that.
We have been looking at IQs. I think it's like 79 and below is low. 80 to 90 is like average. Then like 100 to 110 is like intelligent. And then like 110 to 120 is like very intelligent. And then 120 to 130 is very intelligent. 130 and above is like genius level.
Oh, wow. And your dad's 140?
158.
Whoa.
I know. He never went to university. Basically, he was an army brat, so he just got moved around all the time. So he never got the chance to like apply himself.
Yeah.
And like also his parents were unbelievably cruel. And like... His mum, like my nan, I don't think she was like exceptionally horrible. I think she was just like a cold mum of that era. Uh-huh. But his dad, my granddad, was really horrible to him. Like he would like call him like a little gay and a little perf and stuff, like just horrible stuff. So I think he's unbelievably emotionally damaged, but so intelligent that like it's a real waste. If my dad gave a shit about anything as much as he gives a shit about like 3D printing and lock picking and brewing his own alcohol and like he could just cure cancer, run the world, launch a spaceship.
Wow.
I know. He's an interesting man, is Brian.
Did any of you or your family members, do you think you got any of that from him?
So my IQ was 128, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
How do you find out?
Do an IQ test. You can do a Mensa test to find, like, the internet ones can be a bit hit and miss, obviously, but you can do, like, an IQ test to find out officially, which I think my housemate Carly was going to do because she's cleverer than me. She's, like, on, like, 138 or something, mm-hmm. which annoys me because at school I was a lot cleverer than her.
Really?
At college, we were about the same. And then I went to university and she dropped out and now she's cleverer than me. That annoys me a lot.
Well, I had a friend at uni and she was, I'm not trying to be mean, but she was ditzy. And
yeah, but that is kind of, that's kind of, that comes with it. Like, some people have the gift of the gab and they can get right. their way through anything. And some people are clever and they got no common sense.
Yeah, and so she was studying to be a doctor. She was brilliant in, like, understanding all medical stuff. But, like, if you had a conversation with her, you would think that she would never have a job.
No, I know. And because I'm a little bit like that. In that I will lose my keys, I'll forget stuff really easily. Yeah, I'll just say stupid stuff. But yeah, I can figure things out fairly quickly. But like I said to Carly, what is it like living with me? And she went, it's like living with a very intelligent child.
Aww.
This is
like a backhanded compliment.
Mate, she's full of them. But this is like when we discuss, because I'm the youngest child, like I tend to get away with stuff a bit easier. Mm-hmm. People just take my shit because I will charm them into believing it was never my fault and I had no ill intention and please don't be mad at me.
Right.
I've had all my life to practice that.
Yeah.
And you were like, you remind me of my husband. Because is Will the youngest?
Will's the youngest and I'm the oldest.
I would never guess Will was the youngest.
Really? Why?
I don't know. He just seems like quite mature and together and stuff. You're like, who the fuck have you been meeting? Who Will is? That was the garbage man.
No, I really want to find out my IQ now. I've always been like nervous. I've been like nervous because I'm like, what if it tells me it's like 72 or something?
Oh, Rachel, if your IQ was 72, you would have been in a special class at school. You know, that's a big leap. Like,
yeah, that's true. I also probably wouldn't care if I had a low IQ. I'd be like, well, whatever.
Rachel, you're a very intelligent person. Like, that's not going
to
happen.
Thanks, Alyssa.
It's true. Like,
yeah.
You're a together lady. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Some people debunk it and say IQ doesn't mean anything important, like you say, when it comes to stuff like criminal responsibility, what your IQ is. Like, it obviously has some kind of hold. Otherwise,
yeah.
What's the point?
I mean, look at Ted Bundy or look at...
Was it Ed Kemper who had a really high IQ?
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
He had a really high IQ. I kind of think that really high IQ marries itself with a lack of emotional intelligence. And, like, that's where my dad comes into his own. It's like, I could be crying in front of him and he'll be like, chin up. Would you like to see a 3D printed octopus? So
that's what would cheer me up. So clearly that's going to cheer you up.
Who wouldn't that cheer up? Right, Rach, it's Spin of Delight.
Good episode.
We did good again, I think. Okay, mate, well, I will keep you updated on France. And, well, in fact, by the time this comes out, I'll be back. But I'm sure I'll have more than enough material. So,
yes, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'll try to take pictures too and put them on Instagram so people can share in my French adventure.
Yeah, send me a postcard.
Oh, yes, I definitely will.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Au revoir.
Bye. Au revoir.
Thanks for listening to Transatlantic Crime this week. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at TransatCrimePod, Instagram at TransatlanticCrime, and on Facebook with Transatlantic Crime Podcast.
Thanks, bye.